It's this about like as far as the sale process, you think is it's easier to sell 6-7 residential or one commercial? They're kind of about the same. Not the sales process as far as how hard. I'm talking about like time wise.
Time-wise, I'd say it's about the same effort,
Okay.
but it's it's a different mindset because homeowners usually, they can make a decision fairly quick. A lot of time business owners, they have committees, they have budgets they have to work with. Sometimes they have chains of command. Sometimes they have fiscal years that they've got to wait for the fiscal year to, come about. Maybe their fiscal year ends at the end of August and their budget doesn't come back up until September. Sometimes they've got harvest time, like a farm, they got harvest time. So, they've got downtime in July, but they're busy in August. So they've got different needs than a homeowner. Homeowner doesn't have all of those, really all those factors involved. So that's why it's good to follow up because they might not be ready right now, but then September 1st, like they are hot and ready to go. And if you haven't kept up pace with them and followed up with them, you don't know that. You don't know that September 1st, they're ready to go. And if you're not following up with them, I guarantee you there's another salesman following up with them.
Yeah.
So he's going to get that job because he's courting them. He's taking care of them.
Yeah, definitely.
So.
You say average it takes about a month, 2 months, sorry, following up to get a job, commercial job.
I don't know if I can put an average on it, but I can tell you a few times the first no, it says the second Conklin job that I sold, but it was the first big one, I called him back 6 times. And I'm gonna tell that story tonight. But last year I had 3 jobs. One took 7 times, one it took 9 times, and the one I called him back 13 times before I got the job.
Every time you call them back, do you try to bring some kind of value, or do you just kind of want to like have a conversation, see where we are? What do you try to do on each follow-up? Because I remember before I got into roofing, I was another kind of sales, and I was taught, don't just call to say, hey, I'm just following up. It's just like try to bring some value, try to bring some value. How do you try to do that on the roofing industry?
Well, I'm going to go over all of that. I got a whole bunch of points here that we're going to go over, so I don't want to let the horse out of the stall before we get into our talk. But
I'm glad that
yeah.
we're gonna do that because it's like I don't want to be like I feel like we have to try to make the difference because I'm sure that maybe 7 out of 10 sales guys are gonna be like, hey, where are we at with this? Are we doing it or what? Okay, no, yeah, we have made a decision. And next week, I don't want to call and sound the same and say the same crap that probably the other 7 dudes were saying.
Yep, I hear you. Yeah, I got all of those rebuttals and comments that listed down. I got probably, I don't know, 20 of them. So I don't know, Jonathan, it's 7 minutes past. Do we have any more people on the call, or do you want to just dive in or what?
Yeah, let's just go ahead and dive in. I think we got the tempo set.
Okay. So the first thing I want to talk about is well, first of all, I want to talk about the importance of follow-up because coming from the residential world, like I was telling Licio, I really, unless it was a big residential job, I really didn't follow up. And even then, I kind of followed up very casually. One of my coaches was telling me, there's a difference between a salesman that closes and a salesman that's a nurturer. And a nurturer is kind of like a guy that's like, your customer says, I don't got no money or I want to wait. And then the salesperson's like, oh, okay. Well, I'm here when I need you or when you need me, and just give me a call. And, like it's just passive. That's a nurturer. And a person that's a closer, for some reason, we look at salesmen that are closers like, ooh, that's like the used car salesman, sleazy, pushy, high pressure. And no, I don't want you to be like that. But you got to understand that when a customer is looking for a roof job, they're looking for help. Not just help getting the roof done, but help making a decision on who to use, what product to use, what contractor to use, even a decision on how much to spend and when to schedule it, the timing of it. And so we've got to help them through that process. And I think anybody that's probably on this call if you've ever gone through a major purchase, whether it's a car or a home or maybe a vacation package or something, and you've worked with a salesman that is really good at doing his job and not pushy, but you'll notice that he is able to move the sale along by giving you that feeling that he's helping you. He's assisting you in making a decision, not pressuring you into making a sale. It's a big difference. And so, first of all, we got to get in a mindset that when we've been in that sale, like I've been in that sale, I've been in a sale where I bought a truck and I know I'm buying a truck, and I went in there thinking I was going to spend $25,000 and I come out spending $30,000. But it's the salesman that made me feel comfortable that, okay, I went a little over my budget and I wasn't going to make a decision today, but I did. But he made me feel comfortable about it because he was helping me along to do what was the inevitable. The inevitable, what I was going to make a purchase. But the problem is most customers, most clients, they are indecisive. They just keep wanting more information. They don't want to decide because then it's done. You know, the game is done. So it's our job to help them make that decision and not push them and pressure them, but to be consistent on follow-up and giving them what they need so they can make that decision. Once they make that decision, they can be on their way with the rest of their life, right? So that's, I want you to get out of your mind that we're not being pushy, we're not being high pressure, but we're being helpful. And there's a big difference. So once you realize that you're following up every week, or it could be every week or 10 days, whatever your consistent schedule is, you got to remind yourself that you're being helpful. You're being an aid, not high pressure. So number one, I'm trying to talk to you about, point number one is consistency. So in order to have consistency, you've got to have some sort of method of tracking that, whether it's a Excel spreadsheet or it's a handwritten calendar or it's a Google calendar or a CRM. I use a Google calendar, but I'm sure Jonathan can recommend a few apps or CRMs that are pretty simple that are either free or very, very minimal cost that would help you with this. I know he has a couple that he had mentioned to me. Get one of those calendars or CRMs, and not only do you put in the calendar, you know, okay, I call them this Friday, I'm going to call Bob next Friday, put a note in there also of what your last conversation was. Jonathan taught me this a couple years ago when he gets done talking to me and I mentioned that, hey, I'm going to go down and see my daughter that just had a baby, or I'm going to be in Jamaica on vacation. Next time he talks to me, he kind of slightly brings that up, like, hey, how'd your vacation go? Last time we talked, you were in Jamaica. Or how'd your visit with your daughter go? How's the baby doing? Something just low key like that. But what that does is it helps you to build rapport with that person that, hey, I really care. I actually remember what our last conversation was about. I'm not just trying to, hey, are you ready to get on schedule? So use a calendar and put the date in there, put the time in there, when you're going to call, and make it reoccurring, and use some kind of app or CRM for that. The second thing under consistency is you got to get over yourself. You got to view yourself as not bugging them or high pressuring them or pushing them, but you're helping them. And then number three under consistency is it's got to be a phone call or a personal visit. Now, there's times when I text or email people, but that's usually after I can't get a hold of them on a phone call, or they're not around for the personal visit. Because it's really easy for them to ignore you on a text or an email. So do your due diligence, make a phone call, make that personal visit if you're in the area, and make it like it wasn't a big deal. Hey, I just happened to be in your area and I want to stop by, and or the phone call, and I'm going to go over a bunch of things on the phone call for reasons that you're making the phone call here in a minute. And the last one under consistency is you got to do it once a week, or at a minimum, but no more than 2 weeks. So I would put your threshold at 7 to 10 days, no less, no more frequent than 7 days, but I wouldn't stretch out any further than 14 days. So,
Andy,
go ahead.
I got a question.
Yep.
I know that we're talking more on the commercial part, where you know that maybe business owners are not making a decision right away. Do you think that even after the first visit, if it's whether it's a business or a homeowner, and you know that they're pretty close to making a decision, do you think that even the first follow up should be 7 days after? Do you think, like, because I try to do a follow up 2 days after the first visit.
Yes, the first follow up should be 1 to 2 days after you gave him your estimate, whether it's an email or a handwritten estimate. Now, this is outside of what I've been talking about, but I've been emailing probably 80 to 90% of my estimates for the last 2 years. And my business coach that I've been using the last month is telling me, hey, if you want to close more jobs, you got to stop emailing most of your estimates and start handing them out in person or doing them on site in person and giving it to them in person.
Okay.
You know, I was kind of against it because now that sounds like a lot more time, but you know, I want to close more jobs. And so, I think there's some validity. What he's saying is that if I do it in person, the ratio of closed jobs will go up a lot more. And then once I've done that, I do think that following up in 2 days, 2 or 3 days is the magic number, no less than two, no more than three. And that first one. So that answer your question?
Yeah. Thank you.
Yep. So the next step that I have is actually my biggest one, and that is, what do I say? Like, that's the first thing. Like, oh, I'm gonna call Mr. Smith back and talk about this big job, but I gotta have a reason, right? Like, you gotta have a reason why you're calling, and it's gotta be more than just I just want to know when we're gonna do the job or if we got the job. That's the underlying reason, kind of, but you want to have another reason why you're calling. And so the first one is obviously, you know, you're following up. And so I'm going to start off with the most generic one is, yeah, I'm just following up. Now, anytime you're hearing any of these rebuttals, it sounds odd when we're saying it, but if you put yourself in the consumer's or the customer's shoes and say, if somebody asked me that, how would I feel? Because it's usually a different response than what we feel when we're saying it. Because we feel like, oh, that sounds abrasive. But when you're on the receiving end of it, it sounds normal. So the first one is just saying, I'm following up. You know, I don't want to forget you, so I'm following up. Now, the first one I want to talk about is the Van Singel story. That's the first big, big job that I sold. And this is where this whole follow-up really solidified in my construction business, because I was just listening to what Jonathan and Sam were telling me, and I didn't really believe it, but I just followed the steps, and that's where this story came into play. So Mr. Van Singel, I wrote the estimate out. I don't know, it was like $65,000 job, something like that. And I wrote the estimate out. I printed it out in my mobile printer. And I gave it to him, and his first reaction was, oh, wow, this is quite a bit higher than the other guy. So right off the bat, I had two problems. The building owner told me, $10,000 higher than the other guy, and I like the other guy's product better. He told me that blatantly. He's got ceramic granules or something in his coating, and you're $10,000 higher. So I had two strikes against me. So I'm thinking, you know, I don't know how I'm going to get this job, but I just did what my coaches told me. And I, you know, I'm just going to follow up with this guy. Well, this guy had an onion and carrot farm, and I was raised on a farm. So, I had mentioned that, you know, that I was raised on a farm too. And he mentioned something early on that, he says, hey, you're from Shelby, right? I said, yep. He goes, do you know a guy named Pete Kelly? I said, yeah, I know a guy named Pete Kelly. He's really good friends with my dad. You know, he flies a fighter plane or trains pilots or something. And he's like, yeah, I went to Michigan State University with Pete. So I said, oh, that's cool. You know, I know Pete. We talked for a few minutes about that. Well, that was making a connection, or, you know, we both had a connection of somebody we knew. I followed up with him a week later and said, you know, hey, Keith, I'm just following up on this estimate, and was wondering if you had made a decision or not. I know you wanted to get moving on this. He said, no, I have not made a decision, but, you know, I'll let you know. It wasn't really that friendly. So I didn't really get any good vibes from that. Well, the next week I was doing an estimate for a roof close to my house, and was meeting with a guy named Jim something. And I always have a habit of asking people, you know, what do they do for a living, or a little bit about them. And he mentioned that he was on the school board in Grant Township. And I said, oh, you in Grant? I said, you know a guy named Keith Van Single? He says, yeah, I know Keith. We're on the school board together. So ding, ding, ding. That was connection number two. So the next time, a couple days later, I call Van Single back and I said, you know, Keith, I'm just following up on that estimate and wanted to see where, no, actually I started out by saying, how's it going, Keith? How you been? Oh, I'm good. You know, get the small talk out of the way. I said, hey, I just wanted to let you know, I ran into a guy named Jim, I can't remember his name, Jim Daughtry or something the other day. And he said he knew you. Oh yeah, Jim and I are on the school board together. And he spent a couple minutes talking about, you know, how he knew Jim and what they did. So that, you know, that was a no that day. They weren't ready to move forward. So I called them back a fourth time and they weren't ready. And then I called him back a fifth time, and what he told me word for word is he's like, you know, I've been mulling this over, Andy, and I think you and I know enough of the same people that I can trust you, and we're gonna go ahead and have you get us on schedule. Right there, it occurred to me that it had nothing to do with the product. It had nothing to do with the money. It had to do with whether or not he could trust me as a company, and it all had to do with follow-up and make a connection with him and just using different angles than, hey, is it the money, or hey, is it the product, or whatever. So I only say that story because we all have connections. We all have networks. We can use our networks and connections and in different ways to relate to customers. So that's the first rebuttal, the first reason. Second reason, go ahead and jump in if you have a question on anything, because I'm going to keep rolling forward. Hopefully you guys got pens and pencils ready. But if you have a question, just go ahead and jump in. The second one under reasons, what do I say? You know, ask if they've had any changes to their quote since the last time you gave them an estimate. This might not be on the second one. It might be on the third one. But, you know, if you gave them a quote, they might have given, you know, somebody else might have given them a quote, and then somebody else might have given them a quote. Or maybe they did a little more research, and maybe they have a little more information than the first time you gave them an estimate. And, you know, I've lost jobs, coding jobs, because somebody gave them an option for TPO, and I didn't give them that option because they didn't ask about it, and it didn't occur to me. And so sometimes you want to ask them, you know, I'm just following up on the project, and I just wanted to know, have you made any changes, or do you have any additional needs that maybe we didn't address the first time around? I'd like to, you know, check that out. And the story that I had behind that is actually the job that took me 13 times calling him back, because it started off with coding, and we ended up doing a TPO job on that. It was 260 squares of TPO. It initially was coding, but it ended up going to TPO because it didn't have enough slope to it. Now, I was confident that we could do it with coding, but he didn't feel confident because some of the other contractors were, most of them were quoting a membrane, and only one was quoting coating. But if he wasn't feeling comfortable with coating, then I wasn't going to continue to push it if TPO was also a good candidate for his roof. So I think about by the sixth or seventh call, you know, I asked him, you know, is there any changes or anything different you want us to do with the estimate? And he says, yeah, well, you know, these other people are quoting TPO. Do you think you could give me an option for that? And I said, yeah, I could do that. So that's when we, you know, whipped out an estimate for him for the TPO. And in the end, we ended up getting the job. But it very well could have been that he could have seen us only as a coding contractor and never gave us the option for us to estimate that for the TPO job. So that's another good question to ask. Ask if they have any changes or any other needs beyond what they, you gave them for the first estimate. Third one, mention the estimate will expire soon. So many of us put expiration dates on our estimates, you know, 15 days or 30 days, depending on availability of pricing and the material. Or for many times I did 30 days. Residential jobs, I do 30 days. But on commercial projects, I usually do 15 days. But that gives you a good opportunity. You know, if I write an estimate today on the 15th and it expires the September 1st, I can call them August 28th and say, August 27th, 28th, and say, you know, hey, I wanted to follow up because I see the estimate is going to expire in a few days. And before any price changes happen, I wanted to just check with you to see if you guys have made a decision. You know, we can get you locked in at the price that we already have before it expires. Sometimes that'll trigger them to make a decision right then and there. But it also give you a reason, you know, why you're calling. You want to call them before the quote expires. Next one, mention the repair or the issue that they had initially. Sometimes we get a bid on a big job because we've been doing a repair or maybe a series of repairs for them in the past. And sometimes you can call them up and just say, hey, you know, I wanted to check on that repair we did on the southwest corner. Is it still holding up? Because I know that was an issue. And, you know, I know the facility manager had some concern about it. And I just wanted to see if that was still holding up. Because, if we're going to hold off on the full project, you know, for a little while, I just want to make sure that repair that we've made is holding up. And what that's going to do is that's going to show that you really have concern for their project beyond the big $200,000 job. You're actually concerned about the little $300 job. And that concern, that empathy, is going to show that you're a caring contractor. Next one, butter up the manager. So sometimes you're not talking to the building owner, right? Sometimes you're talking to a facility manager, operations manager, foreman, maintenance guy, whatever you call them. But, you know, they're not the guy that writes the check. They're not the guy responsible for the building. So he's going to take his findings, his numbers, his quote to his boss, whoever it is. And so I like to butter that guy up. I like to make him feel important. So I sometimes tell him, like, you know, my job is, I'm going to tell you the story about Ravana Castings. Ravana Castings was a big job. We've done three projects for them now. And the kid that called me, he's like 27 years old. And, you know, I told him right at the beginning, I said, what position are you here? He's, well, I'm a junior engineer. He's since been promoted two or three times, but he was like junior engineer, facility manager, or something or other. And I'm like, oh, okay. So, you know, you're in charge of this project. Yep, yep, yep. And I think somewhere along the line, he mentioned that this was his first or second project on the building that he'd done. So I told him, I said, well, my job as a contractor is to help you put on the right solution to this roof project. And so I want to make sure you look good. I don't want you walking into your board 6 months from now and saying, yeah, I'm sorry, I screwed up. I picked the wrong roofing contractor. I don't want you to have to do that. I want you to look good. I want your boss to be able to pat you on the back 6 months from now and say, boy, I'm glad you picked the right guy. And so I want to make sure that you do that. And that really butters up that guy, whether he's young or old or whatever, but you want that guy to feel like he's making the right decision, because there's a lot of times I don't meet the building owner ever. And this guy's always your contact, and you want him to feel good about recommending you the next time you do that job. So use that little line, butter him up a little bit and say, hey, I just want to make sure you look good. I want to make sure that, you know, when we finish with this project, that you get an attaboy from your boss. Next one, our discount or our promotional period is coming to an end soon. Now, some people might be like, well, isn't that kind of misleading? It would be misleading if you don't have a promotional period or a discount period, but you can just put a little thing in your company that says, you know, hey, August is our promotional period. You know, we offer 2% off our going rate on our projects in August. That way, you can, when you make a phone call, you make a follow-up phone call, you can tell somebody, you know, yeah, our promotional period is coming to an end at the end of August, so I just wanted to call before that happened and follow up and make sure you didn't miss that promotional period. And then, you know, that might open up discussion to you know, hey, moving along on the project before that ends. So the next one, was our estimate complete? So sometimes you'll send an estimate in and you might have forgot that they mentioned that they were going to remove a unit, or they wanted something special done over on the side, or they wanted an extra gutter, and maybe you forgot to include that. And sometimes they'll remind you, but sometimes, you know, this estimate will go in front of a committee and they'll be looking at 5 or 6 estimates. And believe me, I've been on church committees and city council meeting committees, and they don't say, well, let's just call Licio back, or let's just call Bob back and see if he can include the gutter. No, at that point in time, it's done. They're going to say, well, this guy didn't include everything, or that guy didn't include everything. And so before it gets to that point, if you know that they're going to have that meeting on the 23rd, you can follow up on the 19th or the 18th, you know, before it goes there. You can say, did I include everything on that estimate? I just wanted to follow up and make sure that everything that you had mentioned on the notes that and then sometimes they might tell you, well, you know, I didn't see the gutter on them. And then you can say, oh, okay, I'll make sure that's included. Or maybe they did add something. Maybe you didn't forget something, but maybe they added something that another contractor brought up, and that'll give you the opportunity to add to that estimate. And so, but like I said before, these are just reasons that you're calling. You can have a reason to follow up. You say, I'm calling them up on Friday, and I need a reason why I'm calling. So is there anything that you that maybe missing from my estimate? Is my estimate complete? You can also say, did we include everything? I'm more than happy to make some changes and resubmit that estimate right away. Moving on to the next one. I'm checking in to see if the council or the committee has made a decision. A lot of times the guy that you met with is just a messenger, and it's going to go to a council or a committee meeting. And most of the times you're going to want to get that date, because these councils or these committees, you know, they have 2 days a month that they meet, or maybe once a week that they meet. And it's good for you to get that information to say, you know, hey, I know that they meet at 4 o'clock on Friday. So it's good for you to call maybe just before that, or maybe just after that, to find out the decision, or maybe get more information to them before they make their decision. Make sure that you have your estimate in before that council meeting. So, but not all the time when they make a decision are they going to call you back right away or at all. So you want to check and just say, you know, hey, have you heard anything back from the council or the committee? Has the council or committee made a decision? And once again, you know, that might be a dumb question to ask, but that's a reason you could be calling just to check on that. Next one. Did you receive the other guy's quote yet? I was dealing with this one actually for the last month. A big dairy barn that we were working on, about $280,000 quote. And we didn't end up getting the job, but this guy pushed me off for 3 weeks because the other contractor had not submitted an estimate yet. And every time I called back, he'd say, well, you know, I haven't got the other guy's estimate yet. I've heard some more aggressive responses to this objection. Like Grant Cardone, I've listened to some of his stuff, and he'd say, if somebody says, you know, I'm waiting for the other guy's quote, you can say, well, if, you know, it's taking him this long to get you a quote, can you imagine how long it's going to get for him to take to get start your job? Or if you have a callback or a leak repair, how long will it take him to respond? And I don't like that, because that's kind of a negative approach. If that's more of your style, I guess you could try it, but I did not use that approach. My approach was, did you receive the other guy's quote yet? And he says, I'm waiting for the other guy's quote. And no, I haven't received the other guy's quote yet. And I would say, well, we're ready to schedule it right now if you are, and I can meet with you on Thursday. So that's a little bit of a, like a prompt to push him forward to say, you know, hey, I'm waiting for this other guy, but you know, these guys are ready to go right now, and I can move this thing forward. So your response could be, well, we're ready to schedule it if you are, and I can meet with you on Thursday. Just a real easy, positive comment, and that will usually get the ball rolling. In this instance, the other guy wasn't going to do coding. He was just going to replace a bunch of panels, and he was $100,000 cheaper, and I couldn't get them to change their mind, so I didn't lose. I didn't get that job. Another thing you could say is, hey, I got that extra info you needed. So maybe from a previous call, he had made mention about, maybe he mentioned something about skylights or some special trim, and you didn't have that info at the time. Now, remember, this is, you already gave the estimate. You already, you know, everything's pretty much wrapped up and you're following up. But maybe somewhere along the line, he questioned something, or he, you didn't have an answer for something. And on the next call back, you can say, hey, I got that extra info you needed. That skylight you're asking about, it's actually a blah, 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 blah type. And what we can do is this. It's included, or it's going to be X amount extra. But, you know, that's the reason I'm calling back. And not every callback has to be, hey, can we get you on schedule? I call every callback or every follow-up a touch, because you're bringing your company and your name back into their memory. And after a few times, you're going to be like, wow, this Andy guy, you know, he's persistent. And now I'm thinking about him, and now I'm actually thinking, when's the next time you're going to call? And maybe we are ready to move forward with this project. So they're just going to be soft touches and, you know, reminders that that you're being positive and you're ready to move on the project. Next one, this is kind of a slight twist on one that I had previous, but you can say, oh, the reason I'm calling is the material cost is going up on September 1st. And I wanted to see if this was something you wanted to get on schedule before our material cost goes up. Now, I'm dealing with Conklin right now, so the material cost isn't really going up in September, but I'm trying to make preferred contractors. So I'm hoping that I get a discount by making preferred contractors. But if I don't make preferred contractor, which it doesn't look like I'm going to unless a miracle happens, then I'm not going to get that discount that I need for 2020. And my cost is going to go up because I'm not going to have the discount. So in reality, my cost is going to be more expensive September 1st. So I can truthfully say, hey, material cost is going up on September 1st. So I wanted to see if you're willing to get on schedule before that happens. So that's another one. Next one. And here's one that I use many, many, many times, residential and commercial. It's a really, really, really good one. And that is, hey, I'm just calling you. I have a gap in my schedule on August 28th to the 30th that I need to fill. And wanted to know if you'd like to take that spot. Is that something you want to do? I got, you know, these 2 or 3 days or 4 days, a gap in my schedule. Are you ready to move forward with that? And we can get you moving. You wouldn't believe how many people respond to that, because they look at it as, you know, he's ready to move and he's got crews ready to jump on this. We have a problem. Let's go ahead and do that. And that's a good reason why you could be calling, because you want to fill that slot. And the last one I have on here, there's many, many more, but the last one I have on my list here is our season ends September 30th. So this is just a reminder to not wait until the very end. So our coding season here in Michigan, and much of the North, it's different all across the North, but here in Michigan for us, we can't do any coding after October 1st because of the temperatures and the dew point. And I constantly got to remind people that, you know, everybody seems to wait till the middle end of August or September. And then I try to get everybody packed into September, and it never works. So I constantly got to remind people, hey, you know, our season ends September 30th. And so it takes a couple weeks to get materials and get everything going. So, you know, August is coming to a close. Let's go ahead and get this on schedule and, you know, get that taken care of. And so, you know, I know a lot of these sound like closes, but they are also reasons to be following up and calling them. And so I know that's the biggest hindrance of why we don't call back people, because we feel like Licio said, I don't want to call them just to pressure them and say, hey, are you ready? You want to have a real reason, and it's and you want it maybe be a different reason every time, so that they know that you're actually caring about their project. Now, got a couple more other points on a different part. Two more points. Building rapport. This is different from the reason to call. Building rapport. What are we going on, about 20 minutes now? Oh, we're going 45 minutes. Okay. Building rapport. One way you can build rapport is by seeing what you have in common with them. But it goes beyond fishing and hunting and, you know, love of sailboats and stuff like that. What I'm talking about building rapport, when you find something common with them, like you can say something like, you did their neighbor's roof last year. Or, oh, I see you're a tool and die shop. We did a tool and die shop for A&B Tool and Die last year. Or one that I use pretty common is if I'm looking at a dairy farm, you know, I'll say, you know, oh, I've worked with dairy farms quite a bit. So you want to talk about those other things that the other people you've dealt with, because sometimes you'll find out that, you know, XYZ dairy, but they wouldn't pick anybody bad. So you just kind of bring that up that, you know, you've done other similar ones. Now on the hobbies level, you can say something like, I noticed you're a Lions fan. You think they're going to win this year? Or do you think they'll have a good year this year? I wouldn't spend a lot of time on that. You're not looking to start a discussion. You're just getting them to talk a little bit. And this is a good icebreaker when you're following up. You can, you know, say, hey, the last time I was in there, I noticed you're a Lions fan. Or, you know, I noticed that, you know, you're a Tiger Woods fan. Did you see that he won the Masters? Something, it's always going to be something different. And you don't want it to sound fake or cheesy, okay? They'll tend to come up naturally if you just look for them and keep them at the front of your mind. But don't be afraid to say them, you know, hey, I just noticed this. What do you think about that? It could be a storm. It could be the cost of gas. It could be the state of the roads in Michigan. But all that is to kind of build a little rapport, to build a little bit of a relationship there. Next one is in the building rapport department is, when we do this project, we're going to blah, 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 blah. Now, what I mean by that is we have the tendency as contractors sometimes to say, if we get this project, we're going to build this corner up, or we're going to put ISO over here, or we're going to, you know, fix that board. Don't use the word if. That's lethal. That's very bad for making rapport. So if you use the word if, it makes it sound like, yeah, if you do the job. But if you say when we do the job, that's kind of subliminally putting in the customer's mind that you are doing the job, because you're already stating when we do this job, we're going to do it like this. I know it kind of sounds like you're splitting hairs, but it really is a subliminal subconscious thought that you're putting into that customer's mind. So don't ever use the word if. Use the word when. When we do this job, we are going to do this and that. The next one, use commonalities. Like, this is a little bit spin on the one I had before, but the one that I use a lot is, I grew up on a farm, so I kind of know how farms work. Or if you didn't grow up on a farm, you can say, I've worked on a lot of other farming operations, so I know how the operations work. And, you know, on farms and other commercial operations, how you work around their production and operation is almost just as important as the roof itself. So sometimes it's a second, you know, the roof is secondary. Not interrupting their operation is the most important thing. So you want them to make sure that you have experience with that, or that you've worked on other places, and you kind of understand that dilemma. Another one, the way to build rapport is, if you're talking to a person that maybe not what was the initial person you talked to, on a follow-up call, you can say, hey, when I was talking to Bob, he mentioned that he had a problem with, you know, the roof over the boiler. Is that correct? And by that, you're pulling him into that original conversation. And once again, this is a reason you're calling, just, and you can say, just to make sure that, you and Bob and this other guy is on the same page by saying, hey, when you said you had an issue over that boiler room, is that correct? I just wanted to make sure that, you know, that's taken care of. So these are all just ways to build rapport. You're not always going to use those in every conversation, but you can mix it up a little bit by saying that. Now, wrapping up on the ending, this is probably the most important thing that I'm going to say tonight, because this is going to help you to follow up the next time. And the most important thing, and I want you to write this down, is you've got to ask them at the very end, do you mind if I follow up in a week or so? Okay, so if I'm calling back this afternoon, I'm calling back ABC Farming and say, hey, how, you know, just wanted to follow up on the quote, you know, da 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 da. And I get to the end of my thing, and he says, yeah, we're not interested right now, but I'll let you know. That's usually how they end the conversation, right? I'll let you know, or I'll give you a call back, or something like that. And you feel the conversation come to a close before you say goodbye. You say, okay, that's fine, Bob. Do you mind if I follow up with you in a week or so? And almost always they're going to say, I've never had anybody not tell me this, but they always say, yeah, that's not a problem, or that's fine. Now, if you ever have anybody that says, they kind of waffle a little bit, you'll never have anybody say no. I can almost guarantee you that. But if they waffle a little bit, all you got to say is, you know, Bob, I just don't want to forget you. Do you mind if I follow up in a week or so? I just want to make sure that I don't forget you. Now, that appeals to their subconscious, because nobody wants to be forgotten. Nobody. So that will always bring them around to say, you know, yeah, I don't want you to forget me. So feel free to call me back in a week. And if you say it the right way, you'll never have anybody shuffle on it. So that's a good one. So in closing tonight, I don't want to take up a ton more of your time, because I know it's already going on 50 minutes, but a couple points here is, when you're talking about your company and you're talking on the phone with people, use the word we, not I. Don't say, hey, did you get that quote I sent you? Or, you know, when I come out and do the job, never say I. Always use the word we. Did you get that estimate we sent you? When we come out and do your project, when we were there last week to look at your job. It doesn't matter if you were there by yourself. It doesn't matter if you're a one-man operation. You say we because it makes your company sound bigger, and it makes it sound like you're not all about yourself. You're not so egotistical that you're only talking about yourself, and it makes it sound cumulative. So you want it to sound bigger, and we just sounds more humble. And then the last thing I want to point out is a quote that Kent McFadden, I heard him say several times at the Conklin training seminars. Kent McFadden was quoted as saying, I'm relentless on follow-up, but I'm easy to get rid of. Now, he's talking about prospecting there with bringing new people into Conklin, but I think that also relates to customers and clients. You know, if they ever feel like there's any high pressure, or you're calling them too much, or even you can just think this in your mind that it's not high pressure, you're helping them. And I'm relentless on follow-up, but I'm really easy to get rid of. There's two ways to get rid of me. You just say yes and sign the contract, or you just tell me, no, don't call me anymore. I'm not interested. It's easy to get rid of me. And, you know, I'll take you off the list. So with that being said, I hope you guys got some value in this tonight. I do want to mention that not all of these ideas I'm perfect at. A lot of them I got through a lot of trial and error, and I'm still working on. Some of them I got through Grant Cardone's salesmanship study that I was on and I'm implementing. But, you know, all of them I have used with a bit of success at one point or time. And so hope you guys can get some value out of that, because the end goal is, if you're going to spend as much time on a lead and estimating and everything, you might as well do your due diligence to follow through so you can land that job. Because there's nothing more regretting knowing that somebody else got the job because they followed up one more time than you did. You don't want that. You don't want that other salesperson to follow up one more time than you did, and that's why they got the job.
Definitely.
Do anybody have any questions, or do you have any additions, Jonathan?
Well, the first one is, if there's nothing else that you can really believe in, or you find this difficult, I know that, you know, Andy's become a pro, but he's done it in a really short amount of time. And, you know, he couldn't have talked about it as confidently as he is today, you know, a year and a half ago. But the one thing you can count on is that timing is everything. And the more touches you make, create higher odds of calling at the right time.
Yep.
So I think, you know, a big part of it is just simply that, you know, whether it is that's the day it rained and he had to get the bucket out again, or, you know, he almost went with this other contractor, but, oh, you know what? I actually forgot about Andy. Maybe he, you know, went to five different ones and he just can't remember them all. Or, you know, maybe Andy just brings something up that reminds him of the initial conversation, or, you know, when Andy came out and did an estimate, he did something and then he just remembered because of just being on the phone with him. But the other thing that I also think is really important, just kind of add to the list of tips and tricks, is to follow back in multiple ways. I know Andy mentioned a lot of times calling, but there's other ways you can follow up. You can send an email, you can drop by, in some cases you can text them, but you shouldn't really, I mean, this is my opinion, but you shouldn't hit them the same way every time, because it starts to, I don't know, get annoying. You know, they start getting numb to it, and, you know, they already know why you're going to call, but, you know, there's other ways can soften that up. And then the other reason you want to switch it up is because you don't know their preferred way of contact. You know, for me, it's email. You know, if you're going to call me, odds are I'm probably already on the phone, or I don't want to get back on the phone. You know? So I don't know if, Andy, if you have any tips on that, or anybody else on the call for that matter.
Yeah, that's true. You know, I think we all have different strategies and what works for us. And so I actually listened to a little podcast on Instagram today with Grant Cardone and Jordan Belfort, the Wolf of Wall Street. And, you know, those are both like titans in the selling world as far as closing and sales. But they both had both very different viewpoints on sales. Like, both they had different strategies. And they were going back and forth, back and forth. And one guy's approach, the other guy didn't feel comfortable with it. But that doesn't mean one's right or wrong. It just means we all have different styles and personalities. And your customers have different styles and personalities. So you kind of have to roll with it. So, like, if you're saying if you're going to follow up with an email instead of a phone, personally, what I would do is I would have to style that email in a way that showed there's a reason why I was sending an email, not just the sake of a different format. So if I was sending an email, I would include a link to a video, a YouTube video showing the product application, so that I could be like, then the customer would be like, oh, that's why he sent an email, because that way I could see the link to the video. Obviously, you can't send it over a phone call, so there's a reason why he sent an email. So, like, you just got to think through it rationally a little bit, reason, like, why is he sending a text? Why is he sending an email? They don't think through it that far, but it does. That's the way. That's just the way I look at it, I guess.
Awesome. Well, yeah, those were the two things that I thought, you know, I would add. But, you know, I learned a lot just by everything that you said. And one of the things that I love about these calls is that everybody on them is a business owner, you know, so we can all learn from each other.
Yep. Is there any other questions?
All right. Well, I think you're pretty thorough.
Okay.
Thank you. Have a good one, guys. Thanks, Andy.
Yep, you're welcome. You guys have a good night, and catch you on the next one.